RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time for our money talk. San Farzan Arani, Managing Director of Success Simplified Limited. He's been helping clients with asset allocation for many years now, Bachelor of Commerce from Mumbai University, Postgraduate Diploma in Business, University of Auckland, Diploma of Financial Planning from Australia, 20 years in banking and finance. Hi, Farzan, welcome back.
Hey, good morning, Paul. It's nice to be back, mate.
I thought it was about time we kind of understood what you've done to get here. And so that clears that one up.
Yeah, thank you, mate.
I've been thinking about you quite a bit lately as I've been hearing news from around the world. It seems to me, there's been stock markets are under big pressure, right? Number one.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So we've been talking about that. Is this an inevitable thing that is now arrived, or will they bounce back, or what do you think will happen?
Yeah. In the longer term scheme of things, there will be a bit of this is just a correction. This is not the major crash. Obviously, okay. People are talking about it as a crash because it's just a 3-day event. It was Thursday, Friday, and Monday when markets crashed down. Globally, this is. And obviously, there's factors that play behind the scenes, but you've obviously already seen a bounce back. And we can discuss, if you like, what really happened and the chain of events that lead to these kind of things, obviously. People go to sleep on a Saturday or Sunday, and again, Monday, the markets are crashing again. So just for investors, you just got to be sure you're not getting into the buy the dip mentality all the time, because what I'm just trying to say is there might be further falls, but this is not the start of a bear market yet. Again, not personal financial advice, okay. But just my opinion based on what I'm seeing. There was too much froth in the markets everywhere, and a little bit of the froth has come out. We've seen people like even Warren Buffett selling off a lot of his shares.
In fact, I saw someone say, Farzan, that he was kind of responsible for the slide in a way.
Not responsible, mate. And I'm happy to know Berkshire Hathaway pretty much sold about $767 million. In shares of Bank of America, which was one of their holdings after kind of the GFC and even after COVID, because the new liquidity was coming in. But they also sold a lot of Apple. So yes, people look at the smart guys. They say, see what the smart money is doing. Just like people who are interested in precious metals, they see we should we start buying gold because the central banks around the world are buying it. So don't listen to what they're saying. Listen to what they're doing. So that is obviously a factor, and people are watching him. And he's clearly said the markets are quite overpriced. So he's sitting on a record breaking so many billions in liquidity right now. And he's a smart investor. He's one of the smartest investors around in the world. So he's sitting on a cash pile, ready to deploy these funds when he sees, because everything swings up and down, right? So when he sees they're fairly priced, he'll get in. And obviously buy up, and that's you. That's how, even I talk to my clients, that's how you build generational wealth. You don't hold an asset just for the sake of, don't get emotional with these things. You don't hold an asset, write it down, and then hope it'll ride back up. You sometimes got to get out close to the peak of an asset class. Uh-huh. And then obviously, if you can redeploy those funds again, you get twice the money, because now you're riding it from the bottom up rather than riding the whole wave down and riding it back up. But if you're interested in what really happened, mate, with what's happening in the global markets, you just got to understand what's happening around the world. So as I said, there's been a lot of cheap money being thrown around, and Japan and Europe are in negative interest rates after the global financial crisis. In fact, Japan is an example of why you don't take it to negative interest rates over a decade. And the currency has been sliding, right? So the currency had gone about, so as I mentioned, from about 100 to 162, 167 to the US dollar. Now think about that, as we mentioned, what is doing on inflation. If your currency loses one third of its value, that's creating inflation in the Japanese market. What happens in that case is obviously the Japanese people are suffering. Everything's more expensive for them. As we've discussed, Japan imports a lot of their stuff, whether it's commodities and all that kind of stuff. It imports it. So it has to pay Japanese yen, and a dollar, a liter of petrol might get one third more expensive for you, just because your currency is depreciating. You're not doing anything wrong. On top of that, what's happened is what we call a carry trade. So what's recently happened is a reverse carry trade. It's kind of unfolding the other way around. I'll slow it down to explain to people. I think we've kind of indicated towards this in the past that the smart money will borrow money in countries like Japan. Let's say, even when it was negative interest rates, zero interest rates, if I'm paying a 0.5% in Japan, and the US government on a bond is paying me 4.5 or 5.5, at the moment it's 5.25, I borrow the money in Japanese yen with, let's say, only paying 0.5% interest. I convert it into US dollars, which drives the US dollar up further. Now I can invest it either in treasury bonds with the government to earn 5, 5.5, or I can invest in the stock market, which you've seen what's happening with Nvidia and the Magnificent Seven and all of that. Because when the market's going up, not only are you getting the benefit of the market going up, so those are your real returns, but then when you sell them, you're selling them in US dollars, and then you're paying off the Japanese yen debt off. Now, this is all good.
That's smart, isn't it? That's a smart way to go.
Yeah, but it's always been that way. The right. Carry trade, when you mentioned... You mentioned the postgraduate diploma in business at University of Auckland. That was an MBA degree, which I kind of clocked out after 2 years. But in that also, you study the carry trade and all of that. You understand interest rate differentials. And that's why I've kind of explained to people sometimes also, as much as the Reserve Bank might say, they're seeing the pain in the New Zealand economy, but they're not dropping interest rates, because if they do, it affects their currency. The New Zealand dollar will get hit hard. And then what happens to inflation? Inflation in the domestic economy is high anyway. So in Japan's case, they're caught between a rock and a hard place, because there's only one way out. The release valve is either the currency, which we've seen they've been defending the Japanese government bond market by keeping interest rates low, because again, slowing this down, what I said is if they increase interest rates, the bond values will go down. Now, just think of this part of the scenario. If they increase interest rates, bond values go down. Most of Japanese companies and pension funds and banks have bonds on their balance sheet. We saw what happened with Silicon Valley Bank in America as well. So if they increase interest rates, the bond value goes down. So the bond market is an outlet. And if they don't, if they keep interest rates low to save the bond market, the currency takes a hit. And that's why the currency has gone from 100 to 167. Now, what's happened is last week, Wednesday, the Federal Reserve and the U.S. met. And so as maybe our listeners have understood, there's a price differential between the Japanese government bond rate, what the Japanese central bank is offering, and what the Reserve Bank and Federal Reserve is offering, is 5.25 to 5.5. So there's a big spread of about 5.5%. Now, that is your carry trade. People, not only in America, but they might invest in Australia. In fact, I've read a report. There's a lot of this money which is going into Australian commercial mortgage-backed securities and all that kind of stuff as well. The Federal Reserve said, yes, we're looking at unemployment numbers. Unemployment numbers are going up. So the talk of the town is that the Federal Reserve, in its next meeting in September, is going to have to reduce interest rates, okay? This is all the market talk. This is not really happening. This is the market talk saying, okay, so if the US dollar comes down and the Japanese central bank, what they did was they increased the interest rate from 0.1 to 0.25, and this caused the massive carnage, right? So it's only 0.25. Can you imagine how hyper-financialized our system is? Yeah. So it's only 0.25. But what you got to understand is, we mentioned this before, these trades are leveraged into the millions and the billions. We're not borrowing 5,000 US dollars. You're borrowing millions and billions and putting it into the NVIDIAs. Now, this was a two-factor event. First was what happened in the US. So people are thinking, oh, we're going into recession, which I've already previously mentioned on this radio chat. America has already been in recession since May. Their numbers and their data has been coming down. People aren't talking about it, but now it's openly being spoken about. Yes, we might be already in a recession. We're going towards it if we're not already in it. So people who think this is the top, they're getting their money out of America or their shares. And on top of that, the carry trade is affected, which has unwound a lot of positions because you get margin calls on this. So they both feed on each other, and the whole thing becomes a snowball effect, and it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's what happened over the last 2 or 3 days.
Okay.
But if I'm being honest, And what you saw there, the Japanese central bank actually increased interest rates because the Japanese individual or citizen is suffering, okay? The inflation is that bad if your currency loses. Well, your currency has lost one-third of its value, right? Think about that. Gee, so they increased interest rates. The yen got stronger. It went from about 167 to about 142. And I think it's about 147. Now, so you can see the impact. What they're trying to do is increase interest rates so the currency recovers, so people are not spending too much and it's not causing too much inflation in the economy. And as I've explained, this is the reason why the Reserve Bank of New Zealand also knows that they've got a problem on their hands, because, well, next week I think they meet on the 14th of August, and if they reduce interest rates, the very next minute you see what happens to the New Zealand dollar. It'll drop if they reduce it.
Okay. Boy, so if this is not the big one, how do we know the big one's on the way? Or is this, a pre-step along the way to the big one?
Yes, it's a pre-step. As I mentioned, during the global financial crisis, people who were on the inside knew stuff happening 12, 18 months prior. If people have watched the movie Big Short, there could be something. I don't know if you remember, about 3 or 4 weeks back, I said, watch out for end of August or September.
Yep.
So this is now where we're getting close to it, mate.
Well, that's why I was thinking about you the last few days, Fazan, because I remember that.
I was getting goosebumps, believe it or not.
you're getting excited, eh?
Yeah, no. I'm joking. But this is the precarious situation we find ourselves in. I'm not saying people should not invest in the share market, but just knowing when to get out and when to stay in is the most important thing. And what we're talking, even though this is not the big one, the Japanese stock market plunged 12%. It was the worst since 1987, biggest one-day crash.
Yeah.
And the Taiwan stock market worst since 1967. So you can imagine these are not small moves. 1967. And the South Korean stock exchange was actually stopped, right? So they have a...
Yes, that's right.
This is the thing as well. And the other thing I mentioned is you might go to sleep thinking, okay, this is getting a bit too much for me. In the morning, I'm going to wake up. And this is, I'm talking about in South Korea, not South Africa. Sorry if I might have said that by mistake. But you might be a South Korean going to sleep and thinking, okay, I can't stomach all this volatility. I'm going to sell off in the morning. But you might not be able to sell it because you can't, they've just put a trading halt on it. So think about these things, just like we've talked about the OBR, and your funds will be frozen overnight, so you might wake up and you not wake up to
it.
Stuff.
Yeah, you wake up to it. Jeez.
So preparation happens before the fact, not after the fact.
That's like waking up to a bad dream.
And just a simple thing. There's so many factors in this, but only so much can be explained on the radio. But think about this. I was having a conversation with a client just last week, and we were talking about New Zealand banks, Australian banks compared to some other banks. The one slightly good thing in New Zealand banks' favor, if you think about this, in America, let's say, for example, after COVID, the interest rates were so low. So people might have borrowed for 30 years at 2%, 2.5%, 3%. Okay. Now, if I've locked in that mortgage for the next 30 years, I'm good as long as I can maintain the payments on that property. You've got to understand banks borrow short and lend long. So now today's funds are costing a U.S. bank about 5.25, but they've actually, the income they're receiving from their existing mortgages over 30 years is very low. So they're making a loss, right? The case in New Zealand and Australian banks, though, they get to reprice their book every 5 or 6 years because we don't have 30-year mortgages. Yes, they might have locked in a 5-year term or 6-year term. So the banks have been suffering, but New Zealand banks have a little more suffering to go as far as the interest rate, the revenue is concerned, I'm saying. But that doesn't mean property prices aren't dropping, which is the other side of the balance sheet. So you just got to understand these little nuances, and there's too many. If you're not financially fully into it and understand how one thing, when A moves, how it affects D, because all of these movements, then you kind of get wiped over. And the average person isn't taught all of this stuff. So, yeah.
I understand, because we've talked about debt default at country level before. Did I hear this week that Ukraine had stopped paying any foreign debt or expenses or payments? Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, mate. I mentioned this prior. We're going to have sovereign defaults. When I say about a sovereign default, it's just a country defaulting on its debt. So this has made headlines now, but most people don't know that about 2 years back, Ukraine suspended all payments on its national debt. Okay, so they just said, hey, for 2 years, we're not going to make any payments. And I don't know if people have realized the US has been sending billions and billions pretty much to keep the country afloat.
Paying the bills, salaries, paying the bills, pensions, those things.
Yes. And the US and Europe have been trying to support it. What people got to understand is this is not support. These are loans. As I mentioned before, JP Morgan and BlackRock have invested money hoping that some stage when there's a rebuilding of this country going on, they will benefit. But what's happened literally recently is they've just gone, okay, on the 1st of August, because the 1st of August, let's say August 2022, for 2 years, they just suspended all payments. They said, sorry, we can't make any payments. And on the 1st of August, on the 1st of August, they said for the next 3 months, we're not going to make any payments, right? So they've pretty much frozen payments on $23 billion, which is essentially a soft default when you think about it. So they've just gone, okay, sorry, we can't afford to pay anything. So for 3 months, we're not going to pay anyone anything. And what I'm just trying to say is there's also a saying between my circles for Ukraine, between Russian tanks and European banks, there won't be much left of Ukraine.
No, I don't think so. I think you're right. Yeah. The country is worth, though, in resource terms, a huge amount of value.
Exactly, exactly. So this is my whole point. Why do you think the BlackRock's and the JP Morgan's lend money and keep this facade going? Because then when you can't pay off your debt, hasn't
the
same...
You take the asset. IMF, the asset.
Yeah, you don't take the asset, but it's a loan through the IMF. Okay. IMF helps countries. They kind of facilitate these loans on certain terms. And when the country can't pay off the loan, you have to sell your national assets. You privatize those assets. Have you not seen this in poorer countries?
We did it. We did it in the 80s.
Well, exactly right. So this is how they get here. I mentioned a book prior as well, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. They get you in so many debts. And this is what happens in countries like your African countries, your Egypts, your, I'm just trying to think of the other country, Sri Lankas and all of that. So they get you in debt. When you can't pay off the debt, Pakistan, for example, through IMF. And when you can't pay off, you have to start selling your assets, Venezuela's and all of that. So there's a this is the way they do it. Now, this is Ukraine is pretty much just it's a proxy war, just kind of the facade behind the facade. And they need NATO to go to war with everything that we've been speaking about with the global debt, unsustainable. And they're just going to kick over the table with the excuse of a global war, which is World War III. And there's this other thing. They just got to, in the meantime, spend till the end, right? Just keep spending till the end. If you're never going to pay it back,
keep it
why
going,
would you not keep it going? Keep
well, they are never going to pay it back. How can they?
No, they can't. They can't. And, and this is the thing. Just think about this, Paul. When we say, oh, the U.S. national debt has risen from this to this, I think, don't hold me to the exact president, but I think during Reagan's time, the U.S. national debt was $1 trillion, and now it's $35 trillion. Now, their debt, just their interest payment is more than $1 trillion, right? So you just think about that. Now, how did that go about? It's inflation as well. But a government never, ever pays off its debt. I just want people to start thinking this, okay? Unless we're totally zero, and there's only one country that has ever paid off its debt completely. It was Bolivia, Bulgaria, whatever. I can't remember exactly. But if I had $2 trillion worth of debt, and as I just said, that bond just needs to be rolled over. I don't ever have to pay that back. So now I had, let's say during Reagan's time, I had $1 trillion and I had this much interest, and now I want to spend another $500 billion. So my interest is 400 and I want to spend another $500 billion. Now I issue $2 trillion this year to roll over the trillion, plus pay the 300 or 400 in interest. I'm just giving a stupid example of the interest, but, and I need another $500 billion to spend into the economy. Come 2 years' time, I need to do that again and again and again. So the debt has never, ever gotten paid. And this is the problem we have. It's, I had some numbers somewhere. I'm just trying to see if I can actually get this of what. Yeah. So the US government debt, because I have notes, so sometimes clients ask me for some numbers around some things. The US government debt, which is $35 trillion, its debt to revenue right now, revenue is your tax take, is 730%. So how do you pay off?
Well, you don't.
$730 with a $100 income. You can never pay it off. So it has to be rolled on. And the problem America's now got is the Federal Reserve's increasing interest rates. So again, when I say central banks are increasing interest rates because they've only got one lever for inflation, but back in the 70s and 80s, it was okay because that was the baby boomer generation. People were spending and buying houses and microwaves and fridges and cars. So if they increased the dial up of interest rates, which went to about 18%, the consumer stopped borrowing because it was hitting their pockets hard. But nowadays, the governments are the bigger borrowers. So it's affecting governments more than anyone else. And as I said, about 2 weeks back also, after the global financial crisis, customers actually deleveraging. So
the only thing to do in the end is kick over the table, like you say.
Well, there is no other option. But whatever's happened with this also, with the share markets and all of that, you just got to understand some simple things. This is not the end. This is a preview of how quickly things can go wrong. And this is only with a carry trade and talk of the Federal Reserve reducing interest rates. Uh-huh. There might be an event in the next 2 to 3 weeks, which might be much bigger.
What about Iran attacking Israel?
Yeah, there's so many factors playing in. So you take risk off the table. If you've got gains in NVIDIA or some of the bigger Magnificent Seven or whatever they call it now, Fab Four, depending on whatever the flavor of the day is, you take some risk off the table. You take your initial investment off. If you made a 100% return on $100, take your initial 100 off is what I tell people. Now, the rest of the 100%, which was your return, is just gambling money, right? Because it wasn't your money in the first place, if you want to play those odds. But we are getting to the pointy end. Everything gets exponential.
The sharp end, yeah.
Well, we are, right? So people just got to watch out these different differentials. And as I said, even though all the banks in New Zealand are saying, hey, Reserve Bank, enough is enough. You've got to reduce interest rates. The banks are only seeing it from their perspective, right? Because the banks want those interest rates to come lower. I've explained what happens is how banks lend short, borrow short, and lend long. So it affects their revenue and they're hurting. House prices are coming down. House prices are being discounted by about 100,000. But if the Reserve Bank does that, the New Zealand dollar takes a hit. Just go back to last week. The New Zealand dollar was sitting down from 60 to about 0.582 or 0.585. Right. It had literally dropped because everyone in the New Zealand media and global media was saying, the New Zealand Bank, the Reserve Bank has no option but to now drop interest rates.
So they price it in, and your
currency drops and then things get more expensive. Why is electricity so expensive in New Zealand? So the Reserve Bank is after the fact. If you also got to think, even if the Reserve Bank drops another 50 or 100 basis points, the Reserve Bank interest rate sitting at 5.25, 5.5, but the bond rates at 4 point something, right? So the Reserve Bank doesn't lead the bond market. The bond market leads the Reserve Bank. The Reserve Bank is pretty much reactionary. The bond market tells them what the price of money should be.
Just a few minutes left, Faz, and two things. I see the Bangladeshi Prime Minister had to jump on a helicopter and head out of the country, quick smart. So that tells you something. And then I want to just ask you about some Manhattan office space, which has just gone for some ridiculously low price. So what happened in Bangladesh? Is that related to economics and money? In the end, everything is, but directly?
Not directly. It's an underlying factor, as I said, over the next few years, as people feel poorer. When everyone's fat and happy, everything's going well, regardless of the country, right? Yeah. As the economy turns down and you find it harder and harder and you struggle to feed your family and the pressures get too much, you've got to vent out that frustration, anger on someone. Last year, it was Sri Lanka, where they stormed the president's house and he had to flee. And now this was Bangladesh just recently, and she jumped on a helicopter and she actually landed in India. She's trying to get to the UK. But this is what happens.
That's a long helicopter flight to the UK from there, I tell you that.
Yeah. But she's landed in India. She's sought refuge for now. But the whole thing is, this is the same rubbish as I told you. This will become a global event. It's only going to get faster and faster because when people see themselves as being oppressed and the government not listening, this was more over a job quota. So it's already in India, but in Bangladesh, it was a big thing where students didn't have jobs. But the government said, we're going to keep so much of a percentage only for people who are certain types or certain castes and all of that. This is socialism at play. Yep. It is not about how good you are to perform the job. It's about what's your skin color or what kind of caste you come from and all of that. In Western countries, it's about your skin color and your, are you rainbow colored or not and all that stuff.
Your diversity.
Yeah, DEI stuff. But our idea, it's more about showing the government wants to show that, hey, we're helping the very downtrodden and we're going to keep certain quotas. And the people are going, so we're educated, we can't have jobs because you're going to have these illiterate people in these government jobs. So this escalates. Again, you're seeing riots in the UK, everything that's happening in France. Eventually, the citizens really are going to start getting frustrated with their governments because they're going to like, we are the taxpayers, we fund you, and you're doing everything against us, which we've spoken on this radio chat for a year now. People only have so much tolerance when it affects their families and their houses and their livelihoods. People revolt. And I said this before, over the next 6 to 8 years, we are going to have revolutions globally. And governments are going to try and come down harder. We saw COVID.
Well, look at the UK. Look at the UK right now.
Yeah, exactly. They're setting up a separate police force to arrest their own citizens for protesting, right? So again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but the whole point is people have a right to say, I'm paying taxes. We went for Brexit. Why are we still letting in so many immigrants? So again, you've got to understand the plan of how they're trying to change the dynamics of a country. Why is America, I think, or 9 or 11 million terrorists and people coming in through the country, and they're all getting, in California, they're getting driver's licenses, mate. So that's all you need for voting, right? So it's just to that corrupt, it's at that corrupt stage. And as I said, governments will spend till the end. They'll keep people happy by just borrowing more. Think about inflation in your portfolio. And at some stage, people just go, this is not helping us. In fact, it's making things worse. And there will be revolutions globally. As I said, read a book called The Fourth Turning. This is the 80-100-year cycle, which happens again and again.
We're at the end of the 80 years. Yeah.
Well, exactly right. And I'll cover up your story about, because I sent you that. That was very interesting because almost a year back, we spoke about the commercial property market. So now, as I said, the second part of this year was going to start getting really interesting, right? We're only in August and now starts the fun, watch the Democratic convention, see what's happening with the US politics and all of that stuff. But we had talked about commercial properties, and the one I want to highlight is obviously there's a property in Midtown Manhattan, which sold at a, get ready for this, 97.5% discount.
Gee.
So it's not, I'll repeat that, it's 97.5% discount. So in 2006, that commercial building, it's a 23-story building, in 2006 was sold for $332 million.
Man.
And August 2024, it sold for $8.5 million.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. So $332 million.
Freefall, that is.
That is literally, as I said, you've got 97.5% discount. And again, think about what that $332 million in 2006 would be worth. What, about $400 million now?
Yeah.
So it's an even bigger drop because it only sold for $805 million in today's price. But what I also want people to think about is, in spite, somebody might say, wow, that was a bargain, right? Okay. Now, this is where you got to read under the headlines. No, it wasn't, because even though the person, whoever bought this, for $8.5 million, the current rent, because it's an office tower and it only has the occupancy rates are pretty low, the rent doesn't even cover the ground lease. Okay, so even though I bought it for $8.5 million, my current revenue is not even covering the ground lease. Forget the property taxes and all the other maintenance that needs to be done on the building. So even though I got it for $8.5 million, my rent doesn't even cover the bloody lease on the land. So now I still have to put in more money on top of the $8.5 million. So it's some fun times. There are going to be some bargains, and
I've been bargains. You're not wrong.
There will be bargains if you know how to play it, because everything works in cycles. And again, I talked to some of my high net worth clients. There will be times when we will know when certain assets will be so underpriced, just like your Berkshire Hathaway, right? You've got to understand when to cash out, sit on the sidelines, and there will be a time when maybe most of this global money, you just got to realize, man, there's so much money in the world in government bonds and stuff. It has to go somewhere. It doesn't just disappear, right? So the global GDP is only 110 trillion, but the global bond market is 130 trillion. The US stock market is 65 trillion. Yeah. The gold market is 14 trillion, and Bitcoin's about one and a half. That money has to go somewhere at some stage. If you're fleeing government bonds because governments are starting to default, that money will go somewhere. And if I'm trying to think of even setting up my own money management thing, but I'm speaking to a few people where we can look for these assets and then pre-position it.
So much happening, Farzan. How do people get in touch?
Yeah, reach out through my website, successsimplified.life. Flick me an email and I'll be happy to speak to you or flick you back an email.
As always, super interesting. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, Farzan.
All right, mate. Cheers. Thanks for your time. Take care.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.